Gazza. So we've been appointed by the council to hear and determine the application. I think what we'll do is maybe useful just to have a quick whip around the room just to introduce themselves, team, council staff and things would be helpful, and then I'll just talk a little bit about the procedure and things, and then work out a bit of an agenda and where we're going to go from the day. So I'm not a local resident down from Auckland. Done a bit of work down in Queenstown and understand the issue broadly. I think Andrew used to work here, now based in Christchurch. Obviously we've got Councillor Gazza here. We've also got Committee Secretary Julia Chalmers, that's right, helping out here today with us. And there's Vicky Jones representing the council, I guess, at the moment. Council staff. I think the other council staff are going to be coming during the course of the hearing, I think. Dr. Reid and...
Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday, okay. Yeah. So it might be useful. We just had a quick look around the room, just introduce yourselves, who you are. That would be helpful, just so we know.
I'm Lauren Pickle and I represent the requester in respect of the plan change, and I'm assisted by Mike Thomas.
Right, great.
So lawyer for the requester.
Great.
And we have both witnesses and representatives from the client company, so I'll probably just let you work your way along the line.
Yes.
Yeah. Ian, we are the development manager for Affinity Investment Group.
Right, great.
I'm Paul Croft, I'm the managing director.
Ben Nesby, I'm a landscape architect from Queenstown, and I'm called by the
Thank you.
Mike Bidu from Asset Pits, I'm the surveying and engineering consultant for the
Thank you.
Eva Monti, I'm the chairman of the Central Lakes Branch of Forest and Bird, and we're scheduled to present our case to the Royal
Fine, that's right, thank you. Sorry, what was the surname again?
Alty, A-L-T-Y.
Thank you.
Rob Greenway, I'm an independent recreation witness for the applicant.
Sure. And I think by the looks of things, it's a local paper or something down the back there, is it? Yeah, great. Excellent. Now, have you all been, Mr. Alty, I guess, have you been to a hearing before? Do you know the procedures?
Yes, I know the procedures.
Right.
I have a preliminary question, if I may. We've had access, obviously, to the Section 42A report.
Yes.
And the question is whether it's likely that that'll be updated, and if that's the case, when that might take place.
Right. Updated.
Updated in the sense of the change that has taken place to the proposal,
right,
as shown in the infinity evidence presented a week ago.
Right.
Well,
I mean, well, I think what we'll do is, once we've just sort of run through the preliminaries, I think what I'll do is give the council staff just a chance to say if there's anything there significant in terms of what's come in recently in terms of the evidence, if there's any changes there. Obviously, the process is, as we know, the applicants get to present their case, go through that evidence, submitters then have their turn, as you say, you'll sit down next, tomorrow, isn't it, tomorrow afternoon, and then having heard the applicant's evidence and the submitter's evidence, the council staff have then got a chance to update any information or opinions that they've provided to date on the information that's been provided. So they'll also have a chance then to if they wish to bring up any other sort of matters or any other sort of issues at that point.
The reason this is important to us is that we relied on the application as it was lodged initially,
yes,
presenting our submission and preparing our case as at a week ago.
Yes.
And because of the changes that have been made,
things have moved on a bit.
We're very interested in what the Section 42A reporters have, because it has a bearing on
Sure. Okay. All right, okay. Well, thanks for that. I think we can deal with it as we go through. And then, of course, having heard from the council staff, then the applicant's got to write a reply, so again, they can respond to any of the matters that came up. So that's the sort of the broad process that we're going to follow through in the next 3 days. I'm sure you're aware the sort of the one simple rule of all these hearings is that we get to ask the questions, and any points or any issues you want to raise, please direct them to us. It's not an interaction between the applicant and the submitters or the council staff and the submitters. So that's good that we're all in the room. Now, Just in terms of sort of the timetable, we've set down, we've got the 3 days, so we've got plenty of time, which is great. I'm not quite sure how long you're thinking you need. With the program, I don't know if you've seen the draft program came out, carries you through to Tuesday midday.
I don't think we'll need that long, to be honest.
Right.
Because the evidence has been pre-circulated, all of the witnesses have been instructed just to give a very short summary and
sure.
answer any questions you might have.
Okay.
So we might well be able to cut out the requester's evidence, I would think, today.
Right.
Perhaps even before the, you know, before the end of the day.
Yeah, well, we've got the day anyway.
Yes.
Okay. No, that's fine. I think the submitters are set down for the afternoon, so that time's been now sort of locked in. So
yes.
I guess if there's a bit of a time in the morning, next Tuesday, tomorrow morning, if we've been through the case, we'd certainly, well, there's things we could do. There's probably another site visit or something we could look at
yes.
anyway.
I think there's been some discussion about getting out on the lake.
Yes.
Depending on the weather conditions, I guess, as to whether that might be something that could be arranged for the morning.
Okay. Yeah, we haven't really talked about that too much, about whether we want to do that or not, but
right.
I guess we'll sort that out today, so we've got notice, haven't we, that,
yes,
that
there probably will be a gap
here,
I think.
Right, okay, great. And then we've got the council staff, I think, are coming in on Wednesday. Yeah, that's great. Okay, so that's sort of the broad timetable. That seems to work all right. We went out there, we've done an initial site visit this morning, so we had an hour or so looking out on the site. And that was quite helpful for us to sort of just get the sort of broad picture. We were helped there by a gentleman from the surveying firm. It was very helpful, pointing out some of the poles and what the lots were and that sort of stuff, so that was good. But as I said, that's probably the first go, and we probably want to get out there again and have another look sometime during the hearing. I always find that quite useful. Once you get the evidence, you start to understand what the issues are. I mean, it would again be quite useful to hear from the submitters before we do that. Because they're sort of in the afternoon, aren't they, on Tuesday? But we'll see how we go. We've got Wednesday afternoon too, possibly. Yeah, we could look at that. Yes, now thanks for the pre-circulation of the evidence, thanks for that. I appreciate the timelines were a little bit tight, probably that direction could have came out a little bit earlier, but you know, life is like that sometimes. But I think it's a helpful process, helps us a bit, we get to get a bit of a feel for the different issues earlier. But we've got the day. So while the direction sort of talked about, well, a little summary or something,
yes.
I mean, I grabbed that from something, a bigger hearing, I must admit, longer hearing. We've got the day, so, I mean, for your witnesses, the experts, don't feel pressured in terms of time. If you want to spend a bit of time explaining a point, please do that. Take us to the relevant parts of the evidence, the diagrams, the maps. So feel free there to you know, spend a bit of time going through that detail, because we don't want to lose the points you feel that we're sort of rushed into that process. Now, I think we do have one piece of evidence that's coming through from the Forest and Bird this morning. Yeah.
Yeah.
We haven't had a chance to look at that. I think it relates to landscape issues, is that right? Yeah. So I'm not quite sure.
That is our one witness, a landscape witness.
Yes.
That evidence will be filed this morning by going to Clark.
Yes, it's coming. That's right. No, we've got it here. So I guess it's just your landscape witness would like the chance to perhaps look at that first, or maybe it's just a program timing, you know, when we get him along.
Yes, he's certainly had an opportunity, so
yeah.
we were alert to that evidence as soon as it arrived, and so Mr. Espy has had an opportunity to look at that generally. He's likely to be after the morning break, I would think, anyway, which...
Right.
Just in terms of your ability to have had a look at that and then
yes.
potentially put any questions to him, I think we could. I'm very happy to change the order of witnesses and put Mr. Espy later in the day, if that would assist, if you prefer to have the lunch.
Well, that might
break.
Be. Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. In fact,
that
after
might,
lunch,
yeah.
yes, that might work if that changes
yes.
into your flow of. Yeah.
Yes, the only difficulty I have is that the witness that was the ecological expert was going to. He's the one that's still driving. But I'm very happy. We've got enough of our witnesses here to rearrange
sure.
things. The only thing I really would like is to ensure that our planner goes at the end.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's fine. Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like we can sort of sort that out as we go through. Yeah, brilliant. So I think that's the sort of the introductions and the process. about the evidence. I think it's all from sort of introduction wise. Now, I don't know, Ms. Jones, is there anything sort of, sort of introductory comments that you want to make at this point, or do you want to wait till the, you've heard the evidence and the submitters and the applicant?
In terms of any detail, definitely we'd like to wait. Obviously, to table some supplementary evidence on Wednesday,
right,
from various council experts. But having said that, by way of introduction, we can say the amendments are positive. But that at this point, having considered all the new information that's come to light and re-looked at everything, the council are remaining sort of the opinion that the plan change, as it currently sits before us with the deletion of lots 5 and 6 and all of the other amendments, is still not the most appropriate way of achieving the objectives of the district plan and part 2 of the Act. So, as I say, really positive amendments, but from my assessment, still not to the point that I would be able to sit and say that I accept the plan change as it is, and we can flesh that out further on Wednesday.
Okay. Get an
understanding of where we're at.
Okay, thanks for that. I think that's just helpful scene
setting. Sue, might I just ask a question about the supplementary evidence?
Yes.
And what the expectation is around that?
Yes.
And how that might play out?
Yeah.
Might be useful for us just to understand how that might work it.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
And whether, I'm just thinking about a right of reply, therefore,
right,
and whether that might therefore perhaps be appropriate for that to be in writing and for there to be some,
yep, absolutely,
some period of time to,
yep,
consider that evidence, perhaps.
No, that was going through my mind.
Yeah.
That you may well want a bit of time. We need to probably discuss, but I don't think there'd be any problem from our point of view,
right,
from getting some sort of right of reply in writing after that, a bit of a week or two or whatever it,
yes,
might take for you to sort of simulate the material. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just to confer with witnesses who, some of whom will not necessarily be here on,
yes,
Wednesday when,
on
that,
Wednesday,
when,
yeah,
that evidence is tabled.
Okay.
Mm.
Right. Okay, well that sounds good.
Mm.
All right. Mm. So any other points? Just pause, no, nothing from us. Good. That's great. So I think, well, okay, so, yeah.
Thank you. I've prepared some written legal submissions, which I'll hand up to you.
Thank you. Now, I should say, can people down the front, can you hear all right down the back there? Are the acoustics okay? Yeah. All right. We're probably something you just got to watch it, I think, in the room that keeps the voices up a bit. Because of the, yeah.
Can you come to
me and
sit,
Charles,
and see?
Oh, please.
Thank you.
Yes.
So I'll just take you through these. May it please the commissioners. Plan change 51 simply seeks to move the existing open space zone boundary at Peninsula Bay 150 metres to the north. This will result in the rezoning of 4.37 hectares of land to low-density residential, enabling 24 new residential dwellings to be built, while still preserving the ecological and recreational functioning of the remaining open space. In my submission, it is an outcome that appropriately meets the purpose of the RMA and could be colloquially termed as a win-win for Wanaka. The rezoning will enable the creation of 24 residential lots on land which immediately adjoins a large area of existing low-density residential zoned land, most of which is already undergoing residential development. Aerial photos of the existing status of urban development in the area can be seen in the photos contained in Mr. Cross' evidence, and of course you will have seen that this morning when you've gone on the site visit. The adjacent development of the 342-lot subdivision and all but 5 lots have been sold.
Well, I think that's the kitchen.
That's hard.
Someone escaping has gone through the water. Sorry.
Devonshire Bay development is a 342-lot subdivision and all but 5 lots have been sold. The Penrith Parkland to the northwest of the plan change site has been subdivided into 113 sections consistent with its consent. As can be seen, the area is on its way to becoming heavily urbanised. Indeed, in his evidence, Mr Eastley describes the area as suburban. Consistent with that, the site lies within the Wanaka Structure Plan inner growth boundary in the Queenstown Lakes District Growth Management Strategy. And development of the site for residential purposes would be consistent with that strategy. Moreover, the evidence on behalf of the requester is that this site is readily able to absorb development of the nature and scope envisaged by the LDR zone, provided certain safeguards are put in place. The requester has accepted the recommendations of its experts, and these matters now form part of the proposal as outlined in the evidence of Ms. Taylor. As you know, there is no presumption as to the appropriate zoning of a site when considering a plan change. The existing open space zoning therefore has no inherent priority over the alternatives. Rather, decision makers must start with a clean sheet of paper, considering and ultimately determining the most appropriate zoning to achieve the purpose of the Act. In my submission, the weight of evidence firmly favours the LDR zoning. The evidence confirms that the LDR zoning sought results in a more efficient use of the land and the existing infrastructure, while still appropriately managing effects. It confirms that the important landscape values of the site will be protected, there will be positive ecological effects, and recreational opportunities will be increased. At the same time, the additional 24 residential lots will provide an important contribution to the availability and diversity of accommodation options within the Wanaka area. This land is under the control of a very experienced developer. As Mr. Croft describes in his evidence, demand for sections in Wanaka is still exceeding supply, and as an addition to an existing residential area, these sections could be readily made available in a short period of time, should the plan change request be granted. Overall, the purpose of the Act will be better achieved by the rezoning of this land to LDR. This is confirmed in the Section 32 and Section 32AA evaluations undertaken by Ms. Taylor, which conclude that the proposed zoning is appropriate and will enable the sustainable development of the site. As noted above, additional recommendations have been made in the evidence produced by the requester, and these matters have now been included within the terms of the proposal. As notified, the various development controls included in the plan change were proposed to be secured through the use of land covenants. As sought by the Council in its submission, these controls are now proposed to be secured through rules, which require compliance with the structure plan. This method is a standard method for controlling the development of land and is preferred by the Council, and the requester accepts that. A comprehensive suite of other amendments have also been made to the plan change following notification in order to address issues raised in submissions and in the Council's review. Those amendments are described in the evidence for the requester and are reflected in the rules and the structure plan. The concept scheme plan and the landscape concept plan have also been updated to reflect these amendments. And so in terms of those amendments, by way of summary, lots 5 and 6, which were located within the outstanding natural landscape, have been deleted and will now remain open space zones. New tussock grassland planting is proposed on those former lots. The Lot 21 building platform has been relocated to now fall outside the ONL. As a result, only one building platform, Lot 4, now remains within the existing ONL. The boundaries of Lot 4, 7 to 12 and 20 to 22 have all been amended and those lots reduced in size. The planting that was proposed to be undertaken within those lots will now be undertaken within land which will remain open space zone. And this will address Council's concerns about the maintenance and longevity of that planting. The extent of grassland planting proposed on lots 20 and 21 has been increased. short tussock outside of the building platforms will no longer be able to be removed. A 4.5 metre wide kānaka planting area is proposed along the northeastern edges of lots 23 and 24. Planting of exotic vegetation species on lot 4 and lots 20 to 26 that reach a mature height of more than 2 metres is now prohibited. The landscape concept plan now requires transplant and seed collection for prostrate bluegrass and cushion familiar. The planting proposed both within the lots and within the open space zone will be undertaken by the developer prior to issue of section 224C certificate. The developer will be required to maintain the planting within the open space zone for 5 years. Landowners will now be required to maintain the planting within their land in perpetuity. The development standards have been amended to more specifically control exterior cladding and finish. The width of the gravel walking paths has been increased to 1.5 metres. And a new rule is proposed requiring a financial contribution of $5,000 per consented lot for the purpose of developing or maintaining tracks and trails in the Wanaka area to address any loss of future potential recreation opportunities. Some parts of the existing mountain bike track shown on the landscape concept scheme plan will be the subject of minor upgrades, as described by Mr. Botting. The location of the proposed Bob Robertson Memorial has been moved to near Lot 4, as sought by the council. Overall, and as a result, the size of the area of land to be rezoned is reduced from 6.11 hectares to 4.37. The land which remains open space and to be used by council remains a significant 8.4 hectares. The 24 lots proposed will range in size from 600 square metres to 1,100. The area of Kānaka will increase by 5,680 square metres, and the quality of that planting will be enhanced. And the total area of tussock will stay the same at 7,580 square metres, but the quality of that planting will also be enhanced. In my submission, together these amendments result in a reduction in visual landscape and natural character effects, reduced recreational effects, and increased ecological gain. In my submission, these amendments are important. Not only do they respond appropriately and sensitively to matters raised by the council and submitted during the process, but when viewed within the totality of the proposal, they represent a significant environmental gain overall. This proposal will better achieve the purpose of the Act than the status quo, particularly when one considers carefully what the status quo actually means. Zoning as open space does not necessarily in and of itself result in good ecological or recreational outcomes. As you will have read in the evidence of Dr. Bramley, he has very significant reservations about the sustainability of the existing tussock grassland at the site without substantial and ongoing attention to weed and pest control and the management of recreational uses. All of that comes at a cost and will likely require significant future restrictions on how the site is used. Mr. Greenway considers there is little likelihood that the existing informal cycle tracks will be upgraded and doubts whether there will be much in the way of new or additional recreation tracks in the absence of the plan change, regardless of the rate of growth in participation in cycling and walking. As Mr. Croft notes in his evidence, the open space land which the requester has already vested has not been developed in this way. Conversely, acceptance of PC 51 would result in improvements in the existing tracks, resolution of walker and cycling conflict, financial contributions to the wider track network, protection of important ecological values, and additional housing. These outcomes are certain, sustainable, and secure. Moreover, this hearing relates simply to the appropriate zoning of the land. As Ms. Taylor notes in her evidence, the plan change is just the first step in the approval process for establishing dwellings and infrastructure on this site. The district plan rules set up a comprehensive two-step consenting process which will ensure that all necessary detail is dealt with at the appropriate time. The first step is a resource consent for an outline development plan, which will need to be prepared for Peninsula Bay North and will be based on the structure plan. This will be a discretionary activity allowing a full evaluation of effects. The second step relates to the subdivision resource consent for the lots themselves. A controlled activity, assuming all relevant standards are met, this consent will ensure that matters such as long-term commitments are given effect to via consent notices on the subsequent titles. These resource consents will ensure that detail around planting and track construction, by way of example, will be carefully managed by the council and will give effect to the relevant objectives and policies of the district plan. Now, my submission is useful but not determinative to understand the history of the plan change site, particularly as it is referred to by some submitters. And both Mr. Espy's evidence and the officer's report provide this detail. It is important, however, to be clear that Council's decisions on variations 15 and 25 do not bind you. This is a de novo hearing. Further, and significantly, both the environment against which the most appropriate zoning for this site is to be considered and the proposal in front of you have changed significantly since previous variations. As Mr. Espy describes in his evidence, the configuration of this proposal is very different from those considered in the previous variations and includes rigorous site-specific development controls. It is only as a result of these changes that Mr. Espy is in a position to support the proposal. Your decision must be made with regard to the totality of the evidence in front of you today. That said, the Council's decision to approve Variation 15 was appealed to the Environment Court. The Court granted that appeal partly due to the visual effects of the development proposed at that time. As part of its decision on that matter, the Court made a finding as to the location of the outstanding natural landscape. Dr. Reid would have you revisit and amend that finding in the context of this hearing. To do so, you would have to determine that the Court's decision at that time was incorrect. In my submission, there is no evidence here to support such a finding. Turning then to the statutory considerations, the matters to be considered in relation to plan changes are well settled. In Colonial Vineyard, the Court set out all of the requirements and emphasised the different legal standards to be applied. Those relevant to consideration of the plan change before you are the general requirements in Section 74 and 75. I won't read those out. The Section 32 test and the policies and methods to implement those objectives. In terms of the requirements of Section 75, Ms. Taylor's assessment is that the plan change accords with Section 74 and will assist the Council to carry out its functions so as to achieve the purpose of the Act. Her finding is that it gives effect to the Otago Regional Policy Statement, has had regard to the proposed Otago Regional Statement, and has had regard to relevant management plans and strategies under other Acts. It has acknowledged that Ms. Jones disagrees with that finding, on the basis that she does not consider the plan change would maintain and enhance the ecological and recreational amenity values of the site. In my submission, that conclusion is not supported by the evidence. Ms. Taylor has assessed the proposed new objective policy and rule in terms of Section 32. She has correctly undertaken her assessment without any particular presumption as to the appropriate zone, rule, policy or objective, but rather has assessed the optimum planning solution within the scope of the plan change based on an evaluation of the totality of the evidence. In my submission, her assessment can be safely relied upon. Section 32 does not necessitate an assessment against the policies of the operative district plan, nor does it require an assessment of the proposal against the objectives or policies of the proposed district plan. And so turning then to effects, ultimately your determination as to whether the plan change is the most appropriate means of achieving the purpose of the Act must be determined by considering the potential effects of the subsequent development enabled by this rezoning. recognising, of course, that the acceptance of a structure plan to enable development is itself a discretionary activity. Such effects are then to be evaluated through an analysis of the benefits, costs and risks as required by Section 32, and that requires consideration of the settled objectives of the plan. When considering effects, very little to no weight should, in my submission, be given to the proposed plan, given decisions on that plan provisions are yet to be made. The potential effects of the development that would be enabled by the rezoning are therefore addressed below. Landscape and visual. Mr. Espy's assessment is that a small part of the development will occur within the ONL. He considers that in terms of Section 6B, the plan change will not diminish the ONL or a reasonable person's perception of it. He also notes, importantly, that the district plan provisions do not seek to entirely exclude development within an ONL. In his expert opinion, the landscape character of the site itself would be substantially changed, but that change would be confined in area, and the visual effects would be minimal, except for observers on the north side of Infinity Drive. The owners of that land were made aware of the potential rezoning before they purchased, and none have made submissions. Mr. Espy, an experienced and long-standing local expert, confirms that effects on both landscape character and visual amenity have been well mitigated, and he supports the plan change from a landscape perspective. In Dr. Reid's view, the whole site is ONL. This is contrary to the decision of the Environment Court, which was made at a time when the whole area was zoned rural. Mr. Espy considers that Dr. Reid's appraisal is unduly negative and lacking balance. In my submission, the considered evidence of Mr. Espy is to be preferred. Dr. Bramley's evidence is that overall the proposed plan change will result in an increased area of indigenous vegetation and will have a positive effect on the terrestrial ecology of the site. The large area of new and enhanced planting proposed will reflect the pre-human vegetation of the site, as well as the natural successional outcome which he expects will occur there. The ecological functioning, diversity and resilience of the site will be improved, as will the local connection between patches of shrubland habitat. This is consistent with the district plan, which encourages the incorporation of existing significant vegetation into development, enhancement of native vegetation and increased connectivity and ecological linkages. Ms. Palmer's view is that the status quo, but with the qualifier of improved custodial stewardship, protects the ecological values and is a better way to achieve part two. In Dr. Bramley's opinion, the degree of improved custodial management required would come at a significant cost and may also restrict the future recreational use of the site. It may, of course, simply not happen. As described in the evidence of Mr. Croft and Mr. Greenway, the open space zone land adjoining the plan change site is currently used for informal biking and walking. Tracks have been formed through the area on an ad hoc basis by the gradual removal of vegetation, repeated use of the then cleared space, and progressive widening over time. At present, those tracks are on private land and cannot be said to have been constructed in any sense of the word, let alone to any particular standard. Mr. Botting indicates in his evidence his discomfort with the safety of some parts of those tracks. Dr. Bramley also notes the ecological damage that has occurred as a result of the approach taken by recreation users. It is very important to be clear that other than undertaking some upgrades of the bike track shown on the landscape concept plan for safety purposes, the existing informal biking and walking tracks are not affected by the plan change. This has been the subject of much misinformation in the community, and it is important to the requester that the correct position is made plain in the course of this hearing. Moreover, while the plan change site itself is currently used for general wandering bike walkers, which it is acknowledged would be affected, it is important to note that this current informal use occurs on private property with no right of access at the present time. Should the plan change be refused, the plan change site may vest in council if certain conditions are met. There can, however, be no certainty that those conditions will be met. As such, the existing environment for the purposes of an effects assessment is an area of privately owned open space land that is informally, and one could say unlawfully, used by walkers from time to time. The future environment provides for new walking tracks that avoid conflict with cyclists and maintain a high value experience. Mr Greenaway confirms that there will be no change to the existing scale of tracks and that screen planting will mitigate views of new residences from the existing and proposed tracks such that the amenity experience of future users of the open space zone will be a high value one. It is acknowledged that there will be a 4.37 hectare reduction in the extent of the open space zone as a result of the plan change. This will reduce the scale of open space potentially available for recreation, and as raised by Ms. Galavasi, may affect the potential for future trail development options. However, in Mr. Greenaway's view, it is unlikely that this land, whether or not it is rezoned, will ever be the subject of any significant trail development in the future. The financial contribution rule proposed addresses any residual effect in terms of the loss of potential future development opportunity and enables trail development in appropriate alternative locations. In Ms. Galavasi's view, the plan change should be put on hold until the park strategy is adopted in late 2016. We've not been able to locate a copy of the draft park strategy, but note that this land, while currently zoned open space, is neither controlled nor owned by the council, and as such could not be considered a critical part of the future strategy. The structure of the plan change is such, however, that future funds paid by the developer in accordance with the financial contribution rule may be of benefit to implementation of the park strategy in the future. Ms. Galavasi is also concerned that if Sticky Forest is rezoned and developed in future, the plan change land would see more use. There is no evidence before you as to the potential for future rezoning and development of the Sticky Forest land, and Sticky Forest is not, in my submission, relevant to your assessment of this proposal. Ms. Taylor has undertaken a very thorough and balanced assessment of the proposal as required and concludes that the rezoning will achieve the purpose of the Act. It is acknowledged that Ms. Jones's evidence was prepared before the majority of the amendments now proposed were made. However, in preparing her evidence, Ms. Jones has placed considerable, and in my submission, inappropriate focus and reliance on the content of submissions. Moreover, the summary drawn from some of the submissions and distilled from some of the council report writers appears in some instances to be overstated. Ms. Jones attempts to quantify the value of the biking and walking industry to Wanaka's economy and the extent to which this site could contribute to that value over time. She does this in order to support her view that it would be short-sighted to reduce this area of open space land and that doing so would not assist in providing for long-term economic benefit to the community. In her opinion, there are considerable economic benefits to be gained by continually expanding a diverse range of walking and biking opportunities in the Wanaka area. While this may be true, there is no expert economic evidence before you which would quantify these assertions. Moreover, and importantly, there is also no certainty that the land will be vested unless certain conditions are met, or that the land will be used in a certain way if it were to be vested. Ms. Jones also refers to the expectation of some submitters that the land will be vested. Whether or not the plan change land is required to ultimately be vested as reserved is not before you. Your task is simply to determine the most appropriate zoning. You must also assess the plan change under Part 2. The purpose of the Act is to promote the sustainable management of natural and physical resources. It is the overarching purpose that guides authorities exercising functions under the Act. And in achieving those purposes, such authorities must recognise and provide for various matters of national importance, which relevantly include the protection of outstanding natural features and landscapes from inappropriate subdivision use and development, and the protection of areas of significant indigenous vegetation. and shall have regard to other matters which relevantly include the efficient use and development of natural and physical resources, the maintenance and enhancement of amenity values, the intrinsic values of ecosystems, and the maintenance and enhancement of the quality of the environment. In my submission, Section 6B has been properly recognised and provided for in the PC 51 provision. Your assessment in respect of Section 6B must be reached in terms of the overall criteria of Section 5, which does not mean that in every case, whatever the level of modification, the remaining level of natural character must be maintained. Development becomes inappropriate when it diminishes in any significant way the ONL or a reasonable person's perception of it. Mr. Espy's evidence is that the ONL and a reasonable person's perception of it will not be diminished in that way. In terms of Section 6C, Dr. Bramley considers that the areas of indigenous vegetation on the site are small and degraded and can only be considered significant at the local or district scale. Dr. Bramley's evidence is that the outcome for this vegetation is better if the plan change is approved. The evidence on behalf of the requester is also clear that this proposal is an efficient use and development of natural and physical resources, that amenity values will be maintained and enhanced, that particular regard has been had to the intrinsic values of ecosystems when formulating the proposal, and that the quality of the environment will be maintained and enhanced. As noted in Mr. Espy's evidence, many of the submissions on the proposal are identical, and as such, the issues can be clearly identified. They relate mainly to effects on recreation and visual amenity. Only two of the submissions raise ecological effects in any detail. Many of the submissions which seek that the plan change be declined are concerned about a loss of existing biking or walking tracks and effects on existing general recreational use of the land. The evidence for the requester makes it clear that the existing tracks will not be affected. New walking tracks will be created to enable separation of cyclists and walkers, and a new section of mountain bike track will also be created as agreed with ATN, Bike Wanaka and Council. The impacts of the rezoning on views from the trails have been addressed. Screen planting will mitigate views of new residences from the existing and proposed tracks, such that the amenity experience of future users of the open space zone will be a high value one. Some of the submitters question why the zoning of land can be revisited at all. The Resource Management Act, of course, provides for this, as well as a fully public process for the determination of plan changes. There is nothing untoward in the lodging of this plan change. The environment is not static, and nor is our planning framework. Indeed, the current planning framework is being revisited now as part of a plan review, and this is to be expected. Some of the submissions claim that there is insufficient demand for additional residential land to be rezoned, and therefore the plan change should be declined. Mr. Cross's evidence is that there is demand for this land. However, it is not a requirement of the Act to demonstrate need or demand. The Act is enabling and requires adverse effects to be appropriately avoided, remedied or mitigated. It does not, at least as yet, require a matching of demand with the provision of zoning. Some of the submissions also query whether the rezoning of this land might create some sort of precedent. Council submission also raises this issue. As noted in Ms. Jones' report, the approval of a plan change does not create a precedent. Each case must be determined on its merits. Council submission seeks that the plan change be rejected unless the panel is assured of certain matters, including ensuring that the remaining open space zone land is commensurate with the scale and intensity of the Peninsula Bay subdivision and the needs of the community, that the LDR zoning is appropriate given the landscape sensitivity and proposed methods to manage development, that the proposed planting will provide benefits that address the loss of existing vegetation and that this planting is viable, and that the earthworks required are acceptable in terms of effects on the ONL. All of these matters have now been comprehensively addressed. The purpose of the Act is better achieved if this land is rezoned as sought. The proposed LDR zoning represents a logical and efficient extension of the existing LDR zone. It is consistent with council strategies of urban consolidation and accommodating urban growth by the development of compact urban forms centred on existing settlements. The structure plan mechanism and the proposed rule framework will ensure that the site is developed in a way that maintains and enhances amenity values and the quality of the environment. In my submission, PC 51 can and should be granted. I've listed there at paragraph 63 the evidence that's been lodged. And your hands now to answer any questions or to move on to the questions. Thank you.
Great, thanks for that, Semple. I should have raised this right at the start. I'd find it really handy to get an A3 copy of the structure plan and the yes. revised landscape plan. I know I've got a small version,
but you'd like it, we can certainly arrange that.
Get something arranged right
now. Not now, in the next short.
Yeah, that's right.
The bottom might have a selection.
Right. Okay, well, we've got a black and white structure plan.
Right. There is a coloured version of the structure plan.
Yep, that's
so
great.
So it can go on the district plan ultimately.
Yes,
not,
yep. I see. So the landscape plan, just whenever you can get...
I think we might have a couple here.
Oh,
yeah.
Great.
Right. We will get an additional set, but just in the interim, perhaps that might help.
That's the scheme plan, that's the structural plan, and then this one here is the landscape plan.
That would be great if we could get
a few copies of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
As big as possible in a colour.
Yes, that would be very handy, thank you.
Yep, we'll arrange. Sorry.
I've just got a couple of preliminary questions, just to get myself clear on the statutory issues that we've got to look at. And that's helpful what you've put there in paragraphs 25 and 26. There's see reference these days to the appealing Wanaka case, which I don't know.
I don't know it well either.
Right, okay.
I can certainly address your closing on it when I'm...
Yes, I'm just wondering if I've seen that reference in the few decisions saying, it used to be the Long Bay, set of provisions, I think.
Yes.
And then, the appealing Wanaka is sort of set out in a brief sense.
I presume it's the same sort of set.
Because I think somewhere in there's part two. You raise that towards the end, isn't there? But somewhere in that list of 74 and 75
Absolutely.
And 31,
yes.
I think there's reference to part two,
right.
Isn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So it's an overall evaluation that you're entitled to make.
Yes, that's right. And again, while there's reference to an operative regional plan and proposed regional policy statement, and plans, when we get down to the district plan level, because this is effectively a change to the operative plan,
correct.
Isn't it?
Yes.
The proposed plan is sort of really a separate issue.
Correct. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because it's
a change
to the operative plan. So that's the one we're going to look at.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so your assessment is whether it fits within that planning framework, whether it...
Right.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. No, that's helpful. The Plan Change 15 wasn't the Environment Court decision, and we've got a copy of that through the Section 42 material, so that was helpful.
Yes.
I mean, I saw their reference to a discussion about where the ONL was, and look, a sort of, determination or finding, whatever you might call it, but I mean, there's no plan or anything attached to that which said, this is the words about where we think the line should be, or the court determined where the line was, but there's no plan which said...
I'm going to defer to Mr. Espy on that, because he was involved in that.
Yeah, that's correct. The court just described the line in words. It didn't have a plan shown.
Right. Okay.
Does that affect its statutory authority? I mean, is it, what authority has it got? It's a question mark, isn't it?
Well, a decision was made on the on the totality of the evidence, and there was a lot of landscape evidence produced in that case. And the court made a finding on where it considered the extent of the outstanding natural landscape extended to in terms of inland. And I don't understand that the lack of a plan has caused concern over whether the, you know, I don't think there's ambiguity over the line, as I understand it, as a result of its narrative description.
After Plan Change 15, Variation 15, of course, there was Variation 25.
Yes.
And at the time of Variation 25, people were talking about where the court's line was.
Yeah.
And at that time, there were many plans showing that. And that's the orange line on the concept scheme plan.
Right. Because you look it up in the district plan map.
Can't see a line as such.
It's not the district plan.
Correct.
No, that was my understanding.
Yes.
That's right. So, again, we're not supposed to talk about the operative plan, proposed plan, but the proposed plan does show a line.
It has a line.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
But the operative plan doesn't.
It doesn't.
No.
Yes. Yeah, nothing.
And,
correct.
And, right. Okay, that was Plan Change 15, wasn't it? That's right.
25.
That's right. I think there was reference, and again, the material to Area 3 and 5 of, and they seem to be sort of quite important sort of areas.
Yes.
Are they?
Mr. Esby and his evidence has gone through quite carefully, and I'll have him take you through that quite carefully, what that means in terms of translating that to the current development proposal, how those areas, I guess, if you superimpose them on the current, how that works.
Right.
Yeah.
Have we got a plan which shows those
shows that.
3 and 5? Out of the plan change?
No. Oh, yeah. We do.
Yeah, appendix B to the plan change is lodged. And this will have the plan.
House of Witches has a number of
handwritten notes on it.
Well,
I'm sure.
But that's in the. Have you got the plan? Is there a copy of the plan change request there?
Well, again, I mean, I don't need that immediately. It was just the sort of, again, I think it was helpful. Just
yes. Would you like that in A3? Yes. It's a relatively straightforward plan.
Sure.
We can get a copy of that at the break.
Okay, the break would be fine, I think. It is just helpful to match up the words with the plan.
Yep.
Yeah.
We have a lot of plans, and we were worried about bombarding you with plans, but if there are things that you would that would help to be in plan version, we're happy to provide them.
Oh, it's appended to be within the plan request.
Yep. Yes.
Change Variation 15 structure plan.
Should it be
No, that's
15.
Right,
no, that is 15.
Yeah.
Right. But you were talking about in those areas
25.
And 25. No. So you want 25 areas 3 and 5 from Variation 25.
Well, I can remember reference them in the evidence as being those the bits we sort of identified as being something that should be. Not urbanised, I think. Is that correct? We're getting into the level of detail.
That's right.
Here.
Let's just get the plan. We'll probably help with that, but certainly happy to address those if need be once you've heard the evidence.
Yes, that's right. No, that would be helpful. Just the final question I had about, I guess, how we might interpret some of the objectives and policies. And it's back to this issue about King Salmon and the void, you know.
The void, yes.
Yes, that's right. And I noticed in like paragraph 50, when you're talking about section 6, 6B must be reached in terms of the overall criteria of section 5, which I presume is talking about there might be an objective which talks about a void, but you've got to wrap it up in that wider, you know, part 5, part 2 assessment.
Yes.
You know, which may say in the case there's benefits that outweigh the cost, for example.
Yes.
I mean, are we still? I mean, but
And that's why I say also that importantly, this plan environment doesn't say avoid all development forever in the ONL. You don't have that policy framework which tells you that you could never do it. Otherwise, you do run into some difficulties in terms of the King's Salmon approach, which is to say, well, you know, once you've reached that position in a higher order document, then you know, that decision has been made. You must determine that decision has already been made.
Yes.
That is not the planning framework that you face with in this environment, which does allow development to occur. It does say, it does suggest that development can occur in that outstanding natural landscapes, but it has to be done in a particular way.
Yes.
And that's really what Mr. Espy's evidence has addressed.
Yes.
To ensure that those areas where lots have been, which is really only one of them, within at least where he considers the ONL to be, there's only one of them, and that's in a particular part of the ONL that he considers is able to absorb that change. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the development's not considered inappropriate in that location.
All right, thanks for that. Thank you. I think most of my questions are probably for the witnesses, but you talk about the same paragraph 50, the Richard Henry estate case.
Sorry?
The Richard Henry estate case.
Yes.
Does that talk about ONLs in the same way that we understand them here?
No, not entirely. Not in line with anything. I don't think it's exactly the same way that one. I think almost this area is probably unique in the way that it considers ONLs.
But yes, in terms of the principle, it's talking about people's appreciation.
Correct.
Just following on that, you mentioned that and I understand that plan changes, through the plan change process, there's no presumption as to what the underlying zoning could or should be.
Yes.
Does that have any relationship to an ONL line? If you're dealing with a blank piece of paper, if that landscape line has been determined elsewhere.
I don't think it gives you a presumption as to the appropriate zoning. I think it will be one of the factual matters that will lead you towards, I mean, there will be some zonings, for example, that will be completely inappropriate if that determination on the facts has already been made. So I think it doesn't bind you to a particular zoning, but it will certainly inform your decision as to what the most appropriate zoning is based on that matter.
I think the other ones were probably more appropriate for witnesses.
I guess paragraph 42, the draft park strategy.
Yes.
It's still been written.
Right, that'll be why we can't find it.
That's why we couldn't find it. It was a meeting on it last week.
That's good. I sometimes wonder whether it's just because we haven't managed to, delve sufficiently through the archives of the council, but if it's still being written then.
And it could be under open space strategy, actually. I think that's an overarching.
Right.
It's still.
Right. It's still in preparation. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. That's helpful.
Does the operative plan have a set of criteria about outstanding natural landscape? I mean, about how to determine a line. I mean, if there's no line in the plan, then presumably it's something that's got to be addressed, consent by consent or plan change by plan change, presumably. So it must have some sort of guidelines or criteria in the plan.
There's a set of policy. There's an objective policy.
In part 5 of the operative plan, which is the rural general zone,
right,
the assessment matters at the back of part 5, there's a section on applying landscape assessment matters. And the introduction to that part sets out the landscape categorisation process.
Right. The appendices to the prepared maps also contain the maps or the lines where they have been determined by the court, don't they?
Yes, that's right.
And is this ONL line included with the map?
No, it's not. There are, those appendices aren't very complete.
It's fair to say, isn't it, I think, in the life of this district plan that the ONL has been a bit of a movable fist.
Yeah, it has.
But it's been fine.
But,
yeah.
A bit like that.
Yeah.
I mean, given your background, Mr. Espy, I guess what when we get to you, it'd be interesting to find out, I guess, when the court was looking at the line back in PC 15, I mean, that was a variation, I think, wasn't it, to the proposed plan at that stage. So the criteria used may not have been settled, or maybe in a different bunch of criteria from what's in the plan now. I mean, that's just something to ponder upon.
Right.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying.
Yes,
it's
right.
around the question of whether the O&L line is in the right place.
I guess so, yes. Yeah, that's right. The fact is they took into account at that point.
Yes.
Given
it was
a variation.
Yes.
Moved on a bit, presumably.
Yes.
And now in terms of what the operative plan says.
Yes.
So it might be here.
And that's,
here.
That has been revisited.
Yeah.
Yes.
So don't need to get into that now. Just think about that. Maybe talk about that when you get to present the evidence. Would be helpful. Now, just wondering if there's anything there in terms of, I mean, you've proposed some further text amendments to the plan, which was there attached as Appendix B.
Correct, and Ms. Taylor's evidence.
Now, is there anything there, just so again, the mechanics side of things, that...
there wasn't anything that I necessarily wanted to take you through.
Yeah.
It's outlined in Ms. Taylor's evidence.
So again, setting aside the merits of all this, it's just the understanding.
Yeah, it's just the mechanics of how it works.
That's right.
And so there's not a huge change, as you would anticipate. Not massive changes to the subdivision development rules, other than, as you see them, both small site-specific zones,
right,
which put in place a structure plan as a mechanism to secure site-specific matters. And those were matters that, as I say, were previously supposed to be dealt with by way of covenant. Often really on the basis that that it keeps your district plan cleaner, if you like. I mean, there's the ways of, as you appreciate, different planning philosophies about subzones and whether we should have them or whether we shouldn't. And so originally we had opted for covenants so that the plan itself was cleaner. The council's preference is that those matters are included within the plan, and that's what's now reflected in this, rather than by way of covenants.
That's good, thank you. I was just wondering, on one of the pages there was some text which was in red but wasn't underlined. And I wasn't quite sure if that was some...
1517?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's it.
I think it's just the lack of underline, but I don't think it's anything other than that. It's right here. It is a new... shouldn't be red.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was wondering if it's one or the other.
Shouldn't be red.
Right, so that's an existing...
Yes, because it's Peninsula Bay, not Peninsula Bay North.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Yes, the Peninsula Bay North low density residential zone. Again, I don't have a copy of the plan in front of me, but that's a separately defined area on the zoning map, is it? Peninsula Bay North?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Because there's a number of references through the document
to
the
Peninsula
Bay
North. Yes.
And I was wondering again how you define that. So that's by reference to the zoning.
It will be shown on the new district plan map.
Right.
So it's a
separate design. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
It's the design that will be introduced by
Plan Change. Right. Okay. Do we have a copy of that?
Is it just
that one, is it?
Okay. Yeah. So if you go back to your Plan Change Request document, that one. That should be Appendix something. I'll find it.
it.
Zoning map was produced as an answer to a request for further information by the council.
Oh, okay, right.
So, do you have the RFI response as part of the request?
Sure.
If you don't, I would get copies of it.
I'm sure I do.
We will as well.
Structure plan, obviously, but also the
zoning plan. Map.
Right. Okay, yes, that's the level diagram there, that's right. Yeah. So that would be handy again to get a...
To get copies of that?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I might, if you were able to produce some more of those, you don't need that one back to copy.
We can get some printed.
Great, thank you.
Do you want this
back here?
No. Oh, we can get back to get some more copies.
I think it would be useful for you to hold on to that one.
Run it across the road.
Yes, we'll run it across the road and get some copies made. And
yep, that'll be fine. I think we'll have a little, that'll be fine. So I just wanted to make sure that there was reference to the document north,
yes.
Just north.
Tower,
Peninsula Bay North area.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Great. This question is it's not so much about the topic of the actual plan change itself. Just want to be careful here. I mean, there's reference here, I think, to outline development plans and consents, which are in accordance with an outline development plan.
Yes.
And I was involved in various discussions on other topics where this has become a great big debate about,
what is or is not generally
in accordance with? Yes, that's right. And can you have a consent classification? I think in this case it's non-compliant if you're not in accordance with an outline development plan. Can you have this consent classification dependent upon the outcome of another consent? Now, I can understand the structure plan is going to become part of the plan, isn't it? So that's sort of a bolted-in part, you know exactly what it is.
Yep.
Outline development plans...
sit outside the plan.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
But within a consent.
Within a consent. And I know the Queenstown plan uses them quite extensively. But as I said, I think it was plan change, Franklin Flats 15, there was a big debate about that. We've had a big debate now up in Auckland about these same ideas, framework plans.
Yeah.
And generally the question has come back sort of, avoid them. And I can understand this plan change, of course, is sort of, you know, bolted onto a current plan, which has that mechanism in it. Just a bit worried that, given all this discussion about outline plans being sort of, all this consenting connection being ultraviaries, that that little bit of it could be seen to be, these days, not the right thing to do. And, I mean, maybe we could park and say, well, look, in this case, we're living with the current plan.
That's right, it's consistent with what we're doing currently. And I don't think we've reached resolution on whether those are ultraviaries either. I don't think we've had the benefit of a considered decision on that. I'm aware of the sort of the simmerings, I guess, of discontent or the concern about, as time moves on, whether people will be able to find these outline plans.
I think it's
part of the difficulty, isn't it? Because they attach to consents and instead of being replicated from that. On the other hand, they're being used quite effectively, you know, and have been used quite effectively for a decade or more. I'm happy to have a look at that and put some thought to that in closing and to also see whether there's an alternative structure that would avoid that. I mean, the only thing, very difficult to see how else you do it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you need a variational plan change to get the plan into the district plan, which is unwieldy and inefficient, I would suggest.
Well, I guess but again, it's something Ms. Taylor may want
to... Ms. Taylor has...
I was just wondering in terms of timing whether you wanted to hear from me on that later or now, but just to add some context, the existing Penway subdivision already has a structure plan that's been approved by a resource consent.
Right.
So the reality is, in this case, that consent would need to be varied. So we'll be doing a Section 127 variation to that resource consent to allow for this, essentially what's in the structure plan and the landscape plan, to be shown on the ODP. So it is a slightly different situation to just bringing in a whole new ODP process by design.
Okay. So you need to do a variation of current.
There's a resource consent in place that shows that I can table when I present, which shows the current zoning and what's required to happen in the current open space zone.
Right.
And that consent will need to be varied to give effect to the landscape plan and the structure plan that's been out.
Okay. Well, again, maybe, happy to hear from this a bit later on in the day, so not a meeting, I'm just sort of flagging it. I mean, I guess there is a connection, isn't it, when you think about it, because you say that, I guess it's the difference between the structure plan has got a lot of elements in it in terms of building platforms, building heights. There's another map that shows earthworks.
Yeah.
You could say, because that becomes part of the plan, there's certainty around those elements.
That's right.
There's a revegetation shown, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess it's just the outline development plan that's referred to in the document. I mean does that add another layer of detail, or does it introduce sort of other elements that are important from a protective point of view?
Yeah.
But given there's a question about mechanism, being ultraviolet possibly, I mean, this is what I'm just thinking about.
Yeah.
That's right. Does it then sort of weaken that sort of, the management role of the outline plan? And are there some elements that perhaps would be in the structure plan?
That's exactly what was going through my mind, what would be quite helpful, I think, is perhaps a little matrix, a little table that shows the things that are important and how they're secured.
Yes.
And then we can ascertain from that whether there are any matters that are important but not secured in a way that we are completely comfortable with.
Yeah, that would be right.
Okay. Great. Well, so certainly it's the developers, the developer intends to, to be bound by those matters. It's putting them forward as things that it will do.
Yes.
And so there's no attempt to circumvent things by having them in a lower level proposal. So we need to elevate things where we can certainly have a look at that.
Okay.
I think we just have been acutely aware of this, trying to have the balance between putting a whole lot of additional rules in the plan in existing zones.
Yes, that's right.
And trying to keep, some of those things out of it. And, we may not have got that balance exactly right yet.
Yeah.
But
right.
Very, very happy, and I'm sure Ms. Taylor will be very happy to talk about that further as well.
Okay, great. Thank you. Anybody else?
Just one question, completely unrelated to what we've been talking about. But in your paragraph 33, you just noted the existing owners in the area haven't made submissions. I've read elsewhere that there's all no complaints covered, yep. That they're unable to...
A number of them have no complaints covered. So not all of them, but there are other developments. Penrith Park
doesn't, but Peninsula Bay has the...
Peninsula Bay has no complaint covered.
Yep.
All no submission covered.
Yep.
Which sometimes work and sometimes don't.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure had they made submissions, you can tell us we couldn't have to go to them anyway.
Pretty much.
Right, I think that's... Maybe we do, if that's all right.
Yes,
grab a cup of coffee.
Yes.
That'll be good.
Yep. And you come
And sort of make it back 11:30.
Great.
Quarter of an hour, is that all right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.